Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Michael Dalton, longtime gambling, mainly blackjack, author and publisher, founder of the Blackjack Review. Michael Dalton, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Bob, Richard, it is a pleasure and honor to be here. I have listened to just about every single one of your programs over the years. And luckily, I'm about 30 minutes away from a poker room, and I go every week, and that's when I listen to it.
So half the show on the way down and half the show on the way back?
That's exactly right.
All right. So if we put the commercials in the middle every time, then you could skip them easier. But
nobody skips the commercials, Bob. That's an important part of the show. Everybody listens to
Well, there is on my... On my phone, there's a little 15-second button you can press. Uh-huh. That's a little vantage play technique, you know. You
sounds like you've been known to use that. All right. So how'd you get started in blackjack?
Oh, it was back in probably the mid-80s. Like everybody else, you know, you go to a casino, you see blackjack. Looks interesting, but for me, it was fascinating because after doing some research, I discovered that you can get – break even in the game, maybe even make some money playing this game with the right strategies. So that's when I worked for NASA back 1978 is when I joined NASA.
And as what?
As a, my degree was in space science and physics. And so when I started, I was on the launch team in hydraulics I don't know how I ever got into hydraulics. But eventually, I moved my way up into space shuttle avionics engineering, and then later in my career, I did mostly computer programming and software development, Java, C++. But anyway, getting back to the story, it was a Lake Tahoe Reno trip back. I think it was 1987 or something like that, and I walked into Walden Bookstore, looked at all the blackjack books, and picked Lawrence Revere's book. And that's how I started. And I know a lot of other card counters started with Lawrence Revere's book as well. Nice color graphic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, basic strategy charts.
Blues and reds.
And it had those quizzes to teach you basic strategy.
That's right.
And you learn how many pit bosses it took to screw in a light bulb.
That's right. So I get on the plane. I try to memorize the basic strategy the best I could. I get to Lake Tahoe. It was a great ski trip, and the thing I remember about it is that my boss and I playing blackjack into the wee hours of the morning, breaking even playing single deck blackjack, and I was hooked after that, knowing that the game can be beat with the right strategies.
So you only knew basic strategy
at that time.
You,
yes.
See, I did you one better. I started with playing blackjack as a business, and I flew out for my 21st birthday, and I hadn't learned to count. I just knew basic strategy.
Right.
But I actually won $200.
Oh, okay.
And so I said to myself, wow, if I can do this just with basic strategy, just think how much money I can make if I actually learn to count.
Right. I'll always have this positive variance.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, if you had just read the book, Breaking Even is positive variance for sure.
Absolutely.
And... So, when did you get good enough that you wanted to become a publisher or a contributor to the literature?
I think around 89, and I have no idea why I wanted to become a writer.
So this is like 1 or 2 years after you first started?
That's correct. One of the things that I did is I kept notes of everything. I just started jotting down notes. And that's where my book started, from a bunch of notes. And in essence, it was a dictionary of all terminology. I just started writing stuff. I'm really bad with names. So I always wrote down names of people. And so it morphed into a book that I ended up calling Blackjack and Professional Reference.
Which is still out there, right?
Well, it's out of print.
Okay. I remember when it came out. I remember.
It started as a spiral bound 8.5 by 11 book. Went through two editions of that, spiral bound, and then I finally published it as a proper, you know, bounded book. Got a great artist for the cover, who's a good friend of mine, and ended up selling about 2,000 copies of the book. But since then, I never republished it. But after I sold all the copies, after a few years, I decided, you know what? Why don't I just, because I had a website at that time also, bjarnett.com. I went ahead and just put the whole book online. And then it just morphed into what is today the Encyclopedia of Blackjack.
Which is at bjarnett.com.
Actually, bjarnett.com is still, I own that domain. It has a lot of my all my images and everything are on that site. But blackjackreview.com is the main site.
Why did you change the name?
I think because bjarnett.com is just, it doesn't mean anything. It's just letters. It's just letters. So Blackjack Review is the proper name.
Right, because you had a newsletter called Blackjack
Review.
That's
correct, yes.
And so what made you, you weren't into writing or publishing and suddenly you decided to be a writer and publisher?
It was just, you know, it was a passion.
It was that hydraulics, I think.
Yeah.
It was after I published the book, I said, you know what, let me go ahead and publish the newsletter for some reason. My publication looks an awful lot like, at least size-wise, to Blackjack Forum, Arnold Snyder. And I wasn't trying to compete with him. I really wasn't, because Arnold Snyder is a master of, he's the most prolific writer I think I've ever known in Blackjack. But my newsletter, I wanted to do something for novices, and it was a fun project. And I burned myself out after about 8 years of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting out a newsletter, stuff.
It was a quarterly newsletter for 7 years, I think. And I just burned myself out.
Then it became yearly, and now it becomes centrally.
After that, I think it was around 2000. I was kind of burned out of Blackjack, so I took a break. Because I had a lot of responsibility with NASA, and that just... All my effort was with NASA during that period of time.
So your Blackjack was much more focused on publishing and the website as opposed to playing. You weren't playing a lot.
Not a lot. I mean, I'd have I worked for the government, so I had 4 weeks of vacation a year, which you can stretch to about 5 weeks. So I was coming to Vegas about three times a year, and then in Florida, the only thing they had back then was the day cruise ships, and I played Blackjack on the cruise ships. We didn't have the Indian reservations at the time.
The cruise ships to nowhere?
That's correct. And there were some very, very good games. I learned how to shuffle track, and there were some wonderful games on the day cruise ships.
Uh-huh. So do you ever get, when you get backed off a cruise ship, do they throw you overboard?
Not shuffle tracking. They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, that was the thing about shuffle tracking. Anything that you learn past card counting, they're just much, much slower to, you know, figure out. And your edge goes up and your heat goes down.
Now, there were a few times that I didn't necessarily get backed off, but you can tell on the cruises from Fort Lauderdale to the Bahamas and back, you know, I did that with another fellow card counter. And we didn't get backed off, but going there, it was great. From Fort Lauderdale to Bahamas, you get off, you come back on, and all of a sudden the game has just changed. they're cutting off, you know, 2.5 decks out of 6. So that's how they solve that problem.
Although with a good shuffle tracking game, that's still good.
Right. I wasn't shuffle tracking on some of those games. But those are the games that I felt like I was being backed off.
Well, the other thing is casino bosses are superstitious. So when someone is winning, they do things to change the game, which usually don't mean anything other than maybe give them some psychological feeling that they've done something. So they will change the cards, or in craps, they might change the dice. And sometimes in Blackjack, they would change the way they shuffled the cards, which accidentally turned out to do something. So they could ruin the game by doing something that normally is just superstition, but they accidentally found a way to thwart you. Although sometimes they would change the shuffle and it would get better. So, yeah, but that was just something we had to deal with back in the days when there were lots and lots and lots of single pass shuffles.
I wrote a report back then called the cruise ship report, I think it was called. And in that report, I put together a little shuffle tracking technique. And I the acronym was Shuffle Enhancement and Cutting Technique, SECT. And
you couldn't make it SEX to make it sell better?
The technique was on these cruise ships, they shuffle exactly the same way. You could turn your head, if you knew the end count of the port, the beginning count, if you knew the segment counts, right, you could turn around, go to the bathroom, come back, right, just, at the time they have the cut card, and luckily, hopefully, you want to get the cut card. And even if you didn't, at least you know kind of where, how to play the shoe. But if you got the cut card, you can cut the good cards into play.
Yeah, right to the front.
Without even being there at the table watching the shuffle.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
So the dealers were trained so well that they all did the same.
Exactly, yes.
That sounds unusual.
Another thing that was one of my favorite things to do was there were some casinos that if you walked away from the game, they would, spread the cards out on the table and wait for a player. Right.
Right.
So,
well, that would ruin this technique. Yes. But
well,
it wouldn't, yeah.
this for some casinos, you would get a big chunk of tens and aces and you would play it through. And so now it's sitting in the discard rack and there's 30 or 40 cards, right, that are all with a big count of tens and aces. So now you would stop playing, go to the bathroom. You would watch the dealer. They would take all the cards out of the shoe, put them on the top, pull the six decks out and spread them on the table. So now you know that the bottom of one of those spreads has 30 or 40 tens and aces. So you would come back 5 minutes later, watch them shuffle the cards, cut those cards to the front again, and be able to play them again. So, yeah, it was... And sometimes you could have tables next to each other and just go back and forth and keep playing these great sections of tens and aces and then get up and move back to the next table. So
unfortunately, I didn't make huge amounts of money playing. Even though I did make money, it wasn't, I'm not a Colin Jones who
right.
bet
no, it
thousands
was more
of
an
dollars.
Avocation and
that's
a,
right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So
now NASA has better computers than PCs were in the early 90s when you started to publish. Were you able ever, and you don't have to answer this, were you able ever to use government computers to help you do some of your research?
I had an old Toshiba, little gray, black and white Toshiba laptop with the screens about that big, and that's how I did my book.
Yeah. So you weren't running any numbers. You weren't analyzing.
No. Well, I used Emming software back in the day and SBA, Statistical Blackjack Analyzer.
Right, which was much better
yeah,
and easier
it was much
to
better.
Use than
yeah.
Emmings.
I was really sad that when Emming, the last piece of software that he was writing on, and then it was called the Universal
Blackjack
Engine.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, we just never heard from him anymore.
Yeah, he dropped off the face of the earth. Yeah.
I know I have some rumors, but I would not want to say anything about that.
Now NASA is a government agency. Were there any static because you were now gambling and that's not politically correct or anything like that?
The most awkward time when they had you had to go through a security clearance. This is back in the day when the Air Force was trying to merge in with NASA, so everybody had to have top secret clearance. So I'm being interviewed, and of course, at that time, I had just written my book. So I had to kind of explain that I'm a blackjack author, and I wrote this book, and I count cards and things like that. So that was a little awkward, but I got through my security clearance.
And they didn't think it was illegal?
That's right, exactly.
So many people, that's the first thing they say, crony cards, isn't that illegal?
Yeah. And they didn't think it was immoral. All right, so... Blackjack Review. This is now your website. You've had what kind of stuff is on the Blackjack Review?
Well, today it's practically everything. A little bit of, not everything, but a little bit of everything you will find. If you're looking for something regarding the blackjack, I bet you can find it on my site. I really do. I mean, it's the encyclopedia of blackjack. That's what I'm calling it. Everything from history of the game, which I really began in 2016. I really wanted to add more personality, people in the blackjack world, and the history of blackjack.
But. So at the blackjack ball, which happened recently, and Richard, that's where Richard and I met you, there was a question on the history of blackjack coming from Spain or Italy years ago. Did you happen to get that one right?
I got the Spain one was correct, I believe.
Yeah, good. So,
Your site, doesn't it have it has a lot of the results of the various blackjack balls over the years,
It does. Matter of fact, it has, I've asked Max this, and I think I've asked you this too. I have the date of the very first blackjack ball, but then I don't have it until like the 11th.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody kept track. And part of the problem was when the ball first started, I think it was on the Saturday in between blackjack and, I mean, in between Christmas and New Year's. So, and at then some point, and the reason was that all of the blackjack teams would come to town for New Year's Eve because it's such a big weekend. But then at some point it shifted to later in January, and then now it's shifted later in February. But so there may be a gap in the year, and then a year where there were actually two balls in the same calendar year because it got shifted. So, yeah, anyway. But yes, those dates are lost in history unless somebody kept a diary or something.
I did ask Max's son about the possibility of getting that information too. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. See, Bob and I both do this thing called homework for life that if we had been keeping it for 24 years, we would know the date of these balls. Right. But yeah, as I say, I just...
No, Richard would know the date of the balls. I was not always welcome at the balls.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah. It's not that you weren't welcome, you just weren't known. So.
Oh, there was times I wasn't welcome.
Oh,
when
okay.
I did consulting for casinos, and when I was behind the door talking to a casino GM, players didn't know if I was outing them or not, and they always feared the worst. And so if I'm talking to a casino executive, they didn't want me seeing the faces of the advantage players. So when we started doing this show, Richard said, thankfully, I really don't think Bob is outing players, which is true. And so I got back in simply because, so as long as I stay friendly with Richard, I'm probably good. But if Richard and I ever have an outing, I don't know if I'll still be invited. And that's somewhat of an exaggeration, but, all right. Now, when you go to the top of your website, and it says free stuff.
Yes.
Which actually...
Our listeners like free stuff.
And the you're giving away books, and one of them I was quite familiar with, and I actually sell that book, and I highly recommend it to all the listeners. And that book happens to be Gambling Wizards by this guy named Richard Munchkin. And it's a very good book. And if you don't have a copy, even if you do, you might want to go to the website and give it a shot. Now, how come you're giving books away?
Well, as many people know, I also sell some products. I sell books and software. I sell Casino Verite, you know, which is today the best blackjack software, I think, in existence.
Yeah, I recommend it on this show all the time. Yeah,
right. But over the years, I mean, it's very, very difficult to sell books anymore. You can't compete with Amazon. So I decided to just go ahead and I've lowered my prices. I mean, I'm selling everything at 75 to 80% off on a lot of my products. But in order to clear my inventory, I started this giveaway program about 4 months ago or 5 months ago, and it's in this fifth giveaway, and very excellent odds to win this because very few people even know about it.
Well, now more people know about it.
Wait, but I'm on the list, folks. So don't. I need a copy of Richard's book so I can sell it again.
All you have to do is just put your email. As long as you have to be in the United States, or you have to put a United States address if you win. If you win, you send me the address and I'll just ship you the products.
Selling? You may get inundated. Are you selling Casino Verde at 70%
off? No. That's the software is not a discount. Sorry.
Well, nowadays you can sell books without having to have inventory, which makes it a lot easier. Because having to have inventory would be a big pain.
Well, what I'm trying to migrate to is I have a product review section on the website which lists, I'm hoping, 99% of every blackjack book ever made, and I review it, or other expert opinion that I respect. I use their opinion if I haven't read it already myself, and I review it, and then I have an Amazon link.
Yeah.
So I make my 12 cents per click. If somebody clicks on it and buys the book, I make 12 cents or something like that.
Yeah, I was surprised for somebody who sells books. Like, you have a list of the 10 greatest blackjack books, which were, and I looked at the titles, I was going, if I had to pick titles, I would probably have at least 8 of those. So, I mean, there's no real argument on that they're good. But you sell books, but there's all the link to Amazon. I'm going, he doesn't have any inventory of those. So,
he's trying to get rid of inventory.
I'm trying to get rid of inventory. That's exactly right.
No, but if he's trying to get rid of inventory, he wouldn't link to Amazon.
No, obviously, he doesn't have those books in his inventory.
Even the books that I do have, because my goal is to get rid of all my inventory, and I'm giving it away pretty much. So with that, I figure within 2 years I'll probably, be empty of inventory.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Maybe much faster after this show.
Well, he's maybe, yeah, because people who want to get their build up their library inexpensively. That's a good approach.
The best, when you go to my website, I recommend you click on What's New, the What's New button. Uh-huh. And that tells you what the latest blog is. And under that, it'll say free stuff. And you just click on the free stuff. And then there's an itemized list of all the updates that I do on a regular basis.
So are you writing an article for the site about the blackjack ball?
I may. I haven't decided yet, but I know Tim Buren usually does the main article, and I'm not sure.
Bob always does one, and
Henry wasn't there this year,
right?
No, but he couldn't be there. But he had Night Train taking notes for him so he is going to do an article, but Night Train is going to fill him in on all the.
I've already updated the website just to report on who won the blackjack ball and who was nominated, into the Hall of Fame.
That's good. And since we are going to put this show out the week after we have our blackjack ball show, our listeners already know that Arnold Snyder won the Gross Gene Cup and Anthony Curtis was elected into the Hall of Fame. So,
and Dunbar, I believe.
Dunbar came in the Munchkin Award.
Yes, which I felt so bad because I had the award now instead of a trophy is now a bottle of champagne with an engraved label.
Which is cool.
If I were competing, I would much rather have that than another trophy. But anyway, I forgot to give it to him after he came in second. But fortunately, Bob saw it sitting there and said, hey, wait a minute, this is yours. So congratulations to Dunbar, who's another.
So because I gave it to him, now it's going to be called the Dancer Award. So maybe not. We actually had an interesting listener question on that said that they heard that Richard was unable to take the test at the blackjack ball. And so since in blackjack, we want most blackjack players want to be able to play, and barring is the pits, they thought it's hypocrisy that Richard wasn't allowed to take the test.
Well, what was the question, though? Or there was just, that, they were just voicing their opinion.
Yeah, the...
I agree, especially since, you know, the trophy has been replaced with this giant champagne bottle, you know, that's 15 liters and has a really cool label. And both James Grosjean and I, neither of us are allowed to compete anymore. We both said we would really like to be competing just to get one of those bottles. I mean, it's such a cool thing.
There is an interesting story about the 2017 bottle at the after party. I don't know if you...
Yeah, we
haven't. Did you taste the Grosjean?
No, it had gone... Yeah, so it had gone bad. Yes. Won it in 2017 and decided to open it at the after party, and it was flat.
Right.
So...
Not only flat, but not even didn't taste good.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And so that was.
So those giant bottles apparently do not stay good for long.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there goes my recommendation for this week.
Yeah.
All right. So, but you enjoyed? Did you? Was this the first blackjack?
This was my second.
Your second.
I believe I was there 2018.
And so you knew a lot of the faces.
I did. First time to meet Dr. Ed Thorpe and Bryce Carlson.
Pretty cool. You'd published some of Bryce's stuff, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes, several articles back in the 1990s.
Very good. So right now we are going to take a brief commercial break, and we are going to come back and talk to Michael Dalton about playing the bagpipes.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. South Point is now closed, along with other casinos in Nevada and elsewhere. We look forward to them opening soon. At Predicted.org, it's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The most active markets now are who's going to be the nominees for the election and who will win. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. Videopoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Face Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from six coins per line to 10 coins per line, with the odds increasing as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, kings, and aces return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that if you need an entirely new strategy to play this game. All right, we are now going to go into our mailbag and answer some questions. First one, somebody wants to know if they need to worry that continual shuffle machines will be left in gambling casinos. I'll go first, and for me this answer is easy. The answer is no, you're not required to worry about this. Only worry if you want to. Now, if your question really meant, will there be more CSMs after casinos open up again? My prediction is yes. Casinos have had multi-million dollar losses during this pandemic. There will always be casino managers that believe the best way to make money is to tighten their games. And CSMs are a way to tighten their games and to protect against people like us. Richard.
Well, I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to vote no, just because I don't think one thing has anything to do with the other. And CSMs are expensive, so they're added costs. And players have shown that they don't like them, which is why they have not spread more than what they have already. I think what you will see more of is less live table games in general. You'll see more, you know, video table games where there's not a live dealer. And I think you'll start to see a lot more stadium games where you can put 60 people at terminals around one table. So this will cut down on costs of human dealers, and that's what I think you will start to see more of. But I wouldn't worry so much about seeing all CSMs.
Uh-huh. Very good. I actually enjoy it when we disagree, because we all learn something, including sometimes your host. So here's a question for Richard. It says, if Bob were to die tomorrow from the coronavirus or otherwise, would you continue with the Gambling with an Edge show?
Wow, that's pretty dark. I would certainly try, and I assume Bob would continue on if I could no longer do the show. So, I think we are a really good partnership because the parts that I find easy and don't mind doing are the parts that he doesn't find easy and find difficult, and vice versa. So, if that were to happen, I would try to keep the show going. I don't know, maybe it would change somewhat. I would maybe try to find someone else to partner with. I think it works better with two hosts than one. But, I hadn't really thought about it and don't really like thinking about it. I don't know. What about you, Bob? What would you?
Well, he did say that he wanted the same question for me. And the question was, if Bob were to die tomorrow. And so the answer is easy. If I were to die tomorrow, I would definitely not continue with the Gambling with an Edge show. However,
well, you're really a smart ass today, aren't you?
If Richard were to die, I would like to continue it. I actually thought when I heard this question about who would be a good co-host. At the top of my list is Anthony Curtis, although we need a lot more guests because he fills in as a guest a whole lot of times. But he would seem to be the perfect host for this. He is so busy with his other things, and he has other things that pay a lot more. And this pays nothing, but if he were available, he would be my backup co-host if Richard were gone. And I'm hoping Richard and I get to do this for another 10 or 20 years. But
now you've thought about this more than I have. Now that you say that, you're right. He would be an excellent co-host. But you know who else would be good?
Uh-huh.
Is I think Ed Miller would be a great co-host as well, because he also covers sports and poker, and we've been pretty light on poker for quite some time, but definitely we'd like to do more sports betting stuff, so I think he'd be a good choice as well.
I agree completely. All right, another question. This one was for me. How do you keep so many different video poker strategies in your head at one time? And my answer is, I've been doing this at a pretty high level for 26 years. I have lots of rules of thumb, such as the difference in strategies when flushes pay 5 for 1 versus 6 for 1, or these kind of things only kick in when straight flushes pay 400 or more, or this game is pretty close to another game I know, except for relatively few differences. These kind of things allow me to get up to speed much more quickly than with somebody who was starting from scratch. Writing and teaching strategies forces me to learn them at a higher level than most other players do. I've taught thousands of class sessions, truly over 2,000, And I get the question from students all the time. Often I'll have to look things up, sometimes in front of the students. Sometimes in class they'll say, well, how much does it cost me if I hold this instead of that? And we'll look it up together where the computer's hooked up to a big screen. And it partly gives them the answer and partly tells them how to look it up for next time. I have a curiosity about unusual hands, like a suited queen jack eight is exactly equal in value to a suited king queen nine. Yet, if they're in a hand like ace king queen jack, in some games, both queen jack eight and king queen nine are better than ace king queen jack, and sometimes only one of them are. I find that interesting. When the first time I discovered it, I didn't know why. And so figured it out, written a couple columns about it. Even if you have no desire to publish or you're not particularly good at writing, writing things down to explain why this strange hand is different from that strange hand is a beneficial exercise. I keep an advanced strategy file, and I review them as necessary. Recently, I learned of a good $5 game that had a sizable bonus situation for seniors one day a month. I knew the game years ago, but haven't played it in maybe 8 years and was no longer competent at the professional level. I studied the game for 2 hours before I went in and played. They will probably have the same situation when the casinos open up again. I'll review it for a half hour next time. And a month after that, maybe 10 minutes. And then I'll have it so long as I will play monthly or more. In case you're wondering what the game is, I'm not interested in sharing that information. Since I mostly play in Las Vegas, I usually know what game I'll be playing before I leave the house. This is a very different situation than road warriors who are in a different casino every day and have to be ready for everything. Although I can get up to speed in about 40 games in less than 2 hours, I probably only have 6 to 10 at a professional level with me at 100% of the time. Yes, Richard, now I am done.
It just reminds me of often actors get the question, how do you remember all those lines? And just like this, like anything, it just requires work, right? I mean, that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand about gambling is it requires effort and homework. And you do your homework, and that's how you become good at things.
Yeah, the James Grosjean books, whether it is the later edition or the earlier edition, have lots and lots and lots of tables in them for what to do if you run into this particular situation. I would not be able to remember all those tables. I would have to find the game and then go review what I needed to learn. And there are probably people who do it all the time, get pretty good at several of those games. But I don't think anybody, even James, has them all down so that whatever comes up, he's ready for it. He has to prepare for any of the games.
Right, right. And also, what's difficult about that book is just remembering what charts are even in it. Because numerous times I have asked him, hey, do you have numbers for such and such? And he'll be like, yeah, it's in the book. And then, you know, often he'll be able to tell me the page number. But so, yeah, just remembering all that's in the book and what isn't in the book is a lot to remember in itself.
Okay, here's one mainly for Richard. A player had his first big blackjack win, a little over 13,000. He did not cash out the chips as he was unsure what structuring is and how big of a deal it is to have a CTR.
So having a CTR is no big deal at all. That is not a problem. The problem is that getting the CTR gives the casino your information, which you may not want. So, first of all, I've said many times on the show, my policy is to not cash out after any big win. Actually, usually I don't cash out at the end of any session. So, you know, if something bad is going to happen, it's often going to happen at the cashier's cage where they're going to get a good picture of your face. So, so structuring is you deliberately cash out less than $10,000 in order to avoid a cash transaction report.
So Richard, let's assume you had 13,000 win and you'd started with, you know, bought in for 4,000, say. So you have $17,000 cash on you. So you've already told us you're leaving the casino at the end of the session. When would you go in and pick it up, and what would you do?
Well, usually I would hang on to those chips to play that casino again. Sometimes I would, you know, trade chips with other people, maybe if they needed chips for that casino. It's also good to have chips so that you don't get CTR the other way where you're losing and now you get in more than 10,000 in cash and they have to CTR you. But the CTRs themselves, I make it a point of having transactions purposely over 10,000, for example, at my bank, just so that I will get a safe CTR, so that I have a record of having large cash transactions in case I ever get audited or things like that. If I were ever to be accused of structuring, I can say, look, you know, here are my CTRs at the bank. If I was trying to structure, why would I withdraw 12,000 instead of 9,000?
Very good. All right. Another question. Be our last for the day. Can the average Joe with family and kids make money betting sports? I'm getting the impression the answer is no, because professional sports bettors have to develop and maintain complex spreadsheets with lots of stats and effort to make a model to determine what games to bet. What do you gentlemen say? What does it take to make money betting sports? And do the two of you bet sports? So I'm going to take this one first. First of all, neither Richard nor I regularly bet sports with our own picks. On occasion, somebody we trust, we might follow somebody else's pick. That said, the average Joe is probably not going to make it as a professional gambler no matter what game he's playing. APs tend to be brighter than average. They dedicate a lot of time and resources into how they how they're going to win. Most guys with a wife and a kid need a more dependable income than what you'll get from gambling. Maybe you can do it, but you're going to have to be exceptional at something in order to make it work. Richard, do you have any better news for this guy?
Well, you know, if you look at big sports bettors, you know, like Spanky, who's been on the show a couple of times, he has a wife and kids, I believe. You know, I think many professional gamblers have wives and kids, and it's like any profession, you have to, you know, delegate your time in a way that works, that makes it all work. Now, are you talking about having a wife and kids and a full-time job? Well, that makes the whole thing a whole lot tougher, because you have to have hours to devote to whatever it is you're trying to do. So, is it possible to have a wife and kids and bet sports for a living? Yeah, absolutely. It is possible, but, you know, it's going to take a lot of hard work the way anything else.
Yeah. The part of that question that I was focusing on is when he said an average Joe.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the question is, how are you going to get your it?
Yeah, I would not classify Spanky as an average Joe.
No, that's true. Yep.
All right. It's been fun. Keep your questions coming in at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or Richard has a Twitter account, RWM21. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge.
And many of you have our email addresses. So keep them coming, and we'll keep them answering them. It's been fun.
And now we're going back to Michael Dalton.
All right. So, Michael, I don't know that we've had a bagpipe player on this show before. And are all bagpipes the same? Are these Scottish bagpipes or Irish bagpipes? No, or is there a different? Or?
I think there is a difference, but these are Scottish bagpipes. I belong to a Scottish pipe band. I've played the bagpipe since I think I was 15 years old. So
why? I mean, how did you get into that?
I'm half Scottish. I'm half Scottish and half Armenian. Bob Nersessian is half Armenian, so we have something in common. But I learned my sister learned how to Scottish dance, and back then I was just a kid. So we were always involved in the bagpipe community and stuff. So I decided, you know what? She's dancing. I'm going to learn how to play the bagpipes. And I love it today.
So do you eat your haggis with hummus?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's funny because it's some of the best food in the world and some of the worst food in the world for me. So I love Armenian food, but Scottish food is, yeah, not.
You haven't had haggis until you've gone to Scotland and had it on the Mile, where the castle is in Edinburgh, at one of those bars. I've had haggis before and it's awful, but here for some reason it's just wonderful.
So now I've thought of bagpipe as kind of a solo instrument. So, but you have a bagpipe band.
Yes. I belong to three bands over the year, but right now it's the Space Coast Highlanders in Melbourne, Florida, not Australia, Melbourne, Florida. And bagpiping is, you know, people hire bagpipers for at a funeral or a wedding.
Do you play the same songs for both?
No, I don't think so. But our biggest weekend is, of course, St. Patrick's Day. And our band is inundated by requests.
We play even though you're a Scottish band and St. Patrick's Day is an Irish
That's
holiday.
Right. Yes.
Do you wear...
We actually, our kilt is a green kilt. It's a Scottish kilt, but it's green, so it kind of works out.
Uh-huh. And you play McNamara's band and other
we
Irish
We do play
songs?
A lot of Irish tunes, yes.
Very good. And I don't think I've ever had a fling with your sister, but that was just a joke. Sorry. Taekwondo. How'd you get into that?
Actually, back in my high... Yeah, beginning of college, I got interest. I'm a Bruce Lee fan, and that's how I got into the martial arts. So
I think everybody in our generation that got into martial arts got in because of Bruce Lee.
But I actually started in a kung fu school, and for about a year I was in kung fu, and then when I went to college, I got into Tangsudo, which is very similar to Taekwondo. They're just a little bit variations and difference. Then I got out of it when I started working. And got back into Taekwondo, actually, when I retired and got my black belt after I retired.
You got a black belt after you retired?
After retired.
How do you get a black belt? After you retired from NASA?
From NASA, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, I thought you were saying after you retired from competing, they gave him a black belt just because he quit. I was going, that doesn't make any sense. All right. So other than blackjack, are there other casino games you play?
A little bit of video poker, but I do that more at the end of a day. I take out a cigar. I go relax. Find a little corner where there's a video poker machine. Have my scotch, and just relax.
Uh huh. You ever play live poker?
Yes, every week.
Yeah, you mentioned that he listens to the show on his way to poker. So
that's
do you play hold'em or
primarily hold'em? Yeah, no limit hold'em. They in Florida where I'm at, this 1-2 no limit or 2-5 no limit. Sometimes I love Omaha, but it's, you know, I loved Omaha when I played in home games. And in games actually back 20 years ago when no one really understood Hold'em. I mean, not Hold'em, Omaha. It was a very easy game to beat. Today, people are more, you know, they understand the game. And it's harder.
Pot limit can get pretty high pretty quickly.
Pot limit can get very high. I don't play pot limit. That's, like I said, I'm risk averse. And that's you can't be risk averse in that game.
Yes, you have to be willing to gamble it up. So, your Blackjack Review website, are you likely to continue that until the end? Or are you, what do you plan to do when you grow up?
I think I'm addicted to it. Probably till I'll be doing Blackjack Review on my deathbed.
That last comma on the page 47.
That's right.
Because nobody would read it when it's missing that comma.
Yeah. Don Schlesinger edited my book back in the 1990s, and I communicate with him regularly every now and then about stuff on my website.
How often are you updating it? Is that a daily
thing?
Oh,
it's a daily. It's really daily. I mean, every morning I get up, I have my cup of coffee, I'm on my website 2 hours or 3 hours.
And how often do you add to the blog?
Probably once a month. Maybe once a month or something interesting. I do have sponsors what I try to do is I get a sponsor who have an article and I try to edit it to kind of fit in with the website. And then I'll write something or I'll take something from my old newsletters and I'll put it in the blog.
Hmm. So what kind of sponsors?
Casinos, online casinos, of course.
Okay.
Very good.
So online casinos that accept U.S. players?
There are some. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I you know.
Huh. Okay.
Well, a casino that accepted U.S. players would presumably be your thing is based in the United States.
But Blackjack Review is available worldwide, so.
True.
Yes.
Yeah.
The website is.
What kind of, but so is our show, but.
Yes.
90%+ is people who are in the United States. Very good. We've been talking to Michael Dalton. We appreciate you coming by and sharing with us. Yours has been a name from the past that I knew and never put a face to until recently, and it was a pleasure to meet you.
It has been a pleasure.
So, Richard, at the end of our show, we usually have a recommended.
So I have something to recommend that I haven't actually read yet, but I'm really excited. Steve Forte has written this enormous 2-volume book about cheating at cards.
Uh-huh.
And it's called something like 40 Years of Cheating or something like that, spelled F-O-R-T-E, like his name. And I am eagerly waiting for this to arrive in the mail. It's supposed to arrive tomorrow, actually. So I'm going to recommend it without even having seen it yet, just because his book on casino game protection was so good.
Yes.
I just know this is going to end up being the definitive work on card cheating. You know, for 100 years, the book that everyone goes to is called Expert at the Card Table by Erdenes. And I think this book will blow that out of the water. I think this will be the book that magicians go to for all things.
Sleight of hand and things?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my recommendation is a book. I was going to say, if you win a bottle of champagne, you ought to drink it in a week, because that was what we learned at the Blackjack after party. You should drink it within a year, but Richard rudely ruined that. So I have to come up with another one. And right now I am reading a book written by a future guest on the show. Bob Wachtel was on the show not too long ago. He's a backgammon player, author, publisher, and he has a two-volume set called The Chronicles, which is it's a series of articles written about backgammon. So I just read the first article last night called The Art of Chouette, where Chouette is a form of backgammon played by more than two people. And he discussed it, and I've played in thousands of Chouettes years ago, and I learned stuff. It's like, I wish I had read this before I was playing in those Chouettes. So it was quite interesting. And he's a good writer, and there's lots more chapters I haven't read yet. So
I actually am also reading that book. Well, I'm reading the second volume at the moment. And,
yes.
I've mentioned on the air many times that I like blackjack books where there are stories involved, not just here's the chart, here are the numbers. So what I like about the book is that there are a lot of stories about going to this tournament. He competed. There's this event called the Danes Against the World.
Yes.
The best players in the world are from Denmark, and so they hold this tournament where they take their best players against all the other best players from whatever country and put together a team. And Bob was on the team, and so he chronicles various years. And there are always problems that came up during the match with positions. And anyway, so yeah, I agree. He's a good writer, and it's definitely keeping my interest. So for backgammon players out there, if you don't have Bob's book, yeah, I would recommend that as well.
Yeah, probably in the future they should have the Japan Against the World, because the top two players, Mochi and Michi, are both from Japan.
Well, on the years that Bob was writing about, Mochi and Michi were both part of the world team. So, but the Danish players feel like, as a team, they're so much better than everyone else in the world that, you know, you can add Mochi and Michi to the world team. And anyway, it's good. It's a good book.
Very good. So thank you, Michael Dalton. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.